Relations between Australia and China came to a head last night when the Department of Foreign Affairs released a strongly worded warning about the dangers of Australians travelling to anywhere in China or Hong Kong. This is a country that until recently was a holiday destination and a place we even went to watch the footy. Dr. Paul Monk is an international relations expert with a special interest in China. He's the author of Thunder from the Silence, Rethinking China. I started by reading him the latest travel warning to gauge his reaction. If you're already in China and wish to return to Australia, we recommend you do so as soon as possible by commercial means. Authorities have detained foreigners because they're endangering national security. Australians may also be at risk of arbitrary detention. Now, I found that pretty chilling. What was your reaction when you heard that news?
I believe it. The regime is really becoming feral in China at the moment, and now it's extended the same rules to Hong Kong, which is, of course, a major and dramatic development.
It's like open hostility, though, isn't it? And yet China's been accusing Australia of drumming up anti-Chinese sentiment. So when it comes to that actual travel warning, what was the thing that drove it in the first place?
We've got to remind ourselves there's 100,000 Australians living and working in Hong Kong. That's a lot of Australians. And suddenly the whole regime, in terms of civil liberties and security and law, under which they have worked for years, however long they've been up there, has been pulled from under their feet. That extends then also to friends and family of those people, right? So if you just do a back-of-the-envelope calculation, you're talking at a minimum about 500,000 to 1 million Australians linked with the 100,000 who work in Hong Kong. So the warning is essentially to them, tread carefully and think twice before going up there in present circumstances. And I, for one, because of my background and my public writing about China, would not contemplate going to China or Hong Kong in present circumstances because that law is so arbitrary and far-reaching that it's a threat to any of us. It's a very fraught situation.
Are we likely to see a flood of refugees out of Hong Kong to Australia?
I wouldn't be at all surprised. There's going to be interesting questions, of course, at several levels. The first is, how many people in Hong Kong will choose to leave? How many will be permitted by the authorities there to leave without let or hindrance in all the circumstances? And how will we vet a flood of refugees to hedge against the high probability that the Communist Party will seed sleeper agents among them?
How much is the change in the attitude of China recently to the world about the current leadership?
It's got a lot to do with the current leadership. I mean, Xi Jinping has cast aside several fundamental planks of Deng Xiaoping's reform and opening politics. The first of those is that Deng, for the longest time, and as long as he was alive, said that China should concentrate on building its economy and prospering rather than on building up military power. That could take care of itself in due course, he said. Xi Jinping has doubled down on rapidly building up military power and threatening to use it. Deng Xiaoping said that we have to replace the rule of an individual, i.e. Mao, with the rule of law and that there should be limited terms for the top office holders. Xi has thrown that overboard. Deng tied himself in knots really about the question of legal reform and suppressed democracy movement several times. But I think it's fair to say that he was looking for ways to build an institutional base that would give China stability and allow the possibility of democratization over a longer haul. And that's why, in my judgment at least, he actually said with regard to Hong Kong that it could have full democracy gradually over 50 years because it might then serve as a laboratory for what might be possible in China. Xi Jinping's thrown that overboard and crushed Hong Kong. So there's a stark difference between all the expectations we had hung on to for 30 years and the realities right now.
What about the expectations of the Chinese people themselves? Do you have any insight into how they're feeling about this attitude to the rest of the world? Because it is a world they'd begun to culturally engage with.
Well, exactly. And there's a very interesting book that was published late last year by a Chinese scholar in Hong Kong called Ji Wei Su. The book's called Democracy in China, The Coming Crisis. And he makes the point that precisely because of the rapid growth in prosperity in China, there is now, as there was not under Mao, a very substantial, in financial respects, middle class in China. They're better educated, they're more sophisticated, in a great many cases more widely travelled than ever their parents or grandparents were. and they are increasingly restive and sceptical about the regime's doubling down on surveillance and censorship and indoctrination. And his argument, published just before the crisis in Hong Kong, was that the regime is demonstrating its insecurity by the enormous resources it's pouring into trying to monopolize political power, into censorship, into surveillance, into repression, into incarceration, and that something's going to give. Now, he didn't put a timeline on when things might crack, but it seems to me we in the West need to keep a very cool head and concentrate on that prospect rather than taking the party's bellicose rhetoric at face value and thinking, wow, it's so strong, you know, it's going to win. It's actually treading on delicate ground, and that's why it is so fierce in cracking down on every sign of dissent.
Dr. Paul Monk, international relations expert and author of Thunder from the Silence, Rethinking China.